Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
As we continue to read through The Fall of Edom, Decoding Obadiah's Vision by Rabbi Shapira, we're going to pick up on page number 32. It says, similarly, the word hitlavut, meaning excitement, enthusiasm, and zeal, is rooted in the word lachav, which is a sword's blade. Without the spiritual ecstasy, as we go through the thorns, we will not be able to overcome the days ahead. It is not a coincidence that the final battle will be the battle of lechava, or flame, as recorded in Obadiah chapter 1, verse 18. The house of Jacob shall be fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. The passage provides a great secret about the connection between the final battle and our zeal. The flame of God, Lehava, the sword of Mashiach, Lechav, and our spiritual excitement. What do you have this here? Yeah, thanks. Yep. Hitlavut. In the last days, the house of Jacob will partner with Messiah's flame. The height of the flame in the final war depends on our level of excitement about partnering and joining forces with him. The height and weight of the Lord's sword depends upon us. The word for us in these times is clear. Our struggle against the spirit of the burning bush that refused to be burned is the war against Satan, the adversary. The war will be bitter until the coming of Messiah.
The words of Yeshua carry more weight in light of the story of the burning bush. Without an emphasis on the fulfillment of the mitzvot, spiritual fervor, and the ongoing burning of our very own evil inclination, Satan, the adversary, will consume us. Similarly, it is the Rabbi Shaul who gave the followers the same instructions for the last days. Do not lag in zeal or hitla avut. Be fervent in spirit. Keep serving the Lord. Romans 12:11. The Greek word zeo is translated to mean to boil with heat or to be hot. The thorns in our lives must be burned off as we prepare our bodies, mind, and spirit for the ultimate burning of all evil inclinations. The fiery zeal that Rabbi Shaul spoke of is called blibat esh, or blazing fire. The Holy Tongue reveals a secret about the blazing fire. Do you want me to read?
Yeah, go ahead. Yep. We see in the box there, again, we're talking about Gematria, and this number 434 is blibat, blazing fire. It also equates to Mashiach ben David, Messiah, the son of David. So we see this idea of, Rabbi's talking about our part. Our part, Israel's part, to prepare the way and to partner with Messiah so he can come back, and then when he comes back, to do the final works with him, kind of completing what Messiah has to do along with him. That makes sense. Keep going if you would.
The ultimate consumption that will allow us to come closer to God, as Moses was commanded to come no closer, is through Messiah. Of righteousness.
Our righteousness.
Our righteousness. Mm-hmm. Today, living in the time of Miketz, we must take every necessary step to repair our lives and relationships and practice Torah as we prepare for the coming of Messiah. Moses' question is critical to the Lord as he asks, why doesn't the bush burn up? Upon them my servant David ruled. Do you want to read that one?
Yeah. Torah is preparing us for the coming of Messiah. Moses' question is critical to the Lord as he asks, why doesn't the bush burn up? So this is alluding to on Sinai, he sees this bush, and it says that the bush is, there's fire, it's burning, but it's not being consumed. So Moses is saying, why doesn't this burn up? And this comes up in the Torah portion today, something interesting about this. which I'm not going to get into when we talk about it today, but it says that when Moses came down, his face was like the burning bush. It was radiant. And when you look at it in Hebrew, people were looking at him like he didn't realize it, but other people saw it and they said, hey, you know, they recognized something was different in him. It was like he was like the burning bush coming down. So this idea, why doesn't the bush burn up? And at the bottom here, David, my servant, ruled upon them. What a shocking revelation about the season of Meketz that we're in now. Only through the final coming of Messiah, son of David, will the burning be complete and the evil inclination, Satan, be defeated. The answer is clear. God did not allow Moses to come closer as Moses prophesied of the one who will bring the ultimate repair, Messiah, our righteousness. And he goes into the Talmud about this. But this idea is that there's a connection to the burning bush, a connection to the giving of Torah, King David, Messiah coming back, and then this burning bush that is burning. What's going to get burned up at the end or eliminated at the very end is the evil inclination. Then it'll be gone. It'll be burned away and stripped away. I always look at it like this, our lives. You have the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and you have the Yetzer Tov. And they're constantly battling. But the Yetzer Tov is like the light. It's like the light, but it's not consuming this burning, the Yetzer Hara. But they're there together, kind of working together until the day when Messiah comes back and there'll be no longer it'll be death to the Yetzer Hara. It'll be gone. And the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, is actually, the rabbis talk about this idea, it's Satan himself, or it's like Satan himself. So you get that? That makes sense to you? And so one day you won't have the desire of anything of the evil inclination. It won't be there. Your desire will be to serve Hashem. Does that mean we won't have free will? It's not taking away the free will, but these barriers that we deal with will be gone. And we're going to take a day soon, I don't know when, and we're going to read what the rabbis talked about, the day of the death of the evil inclination. I'll bring a book in and we'll read it together and see what they had to say. Today, we're actually going to read a whole page in Gemara in the Talmud. I'm going to read it to you, which is really interesting for you guys to listen to these conversations back and forth during the Torah portion. We're going to talk about something fun and kind of do something fun. Does that make sense? Does anyone have any questions or thoughts? Yeah. Yeah. The same kind of an idea. Yeah, and it's so both of them have their place, because the place of Satan in your life trying to get you to turn from God has just as much of a place as you doing God's work. Because you're doing God's work in spite of the desire not to. Right? It's a whole lot easier today just to stay home and stay warm and stay out of the rain and everything else. But we decide, that's like the evil inclination would say, just go ahead and just stay home and just worry about you and how you feel, disregard everyone else and the community and Shabbat and God and the service and being one with Israel today. Just do what's easier for you today. And when you overcome that, you say, no, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to follow my Yetzer Tov, which is in line with God, the will of God. I'm going to go ahead and go. Then you actually have something. You've overcome something. Rabbi Bernstein was talking today. There's so much talk within Christianity, this idea of the grace versus law, okay? Grace replacing law. No, but what they don't see is that even without looking at the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, there's no such thing as grace without the law. If you could drive 150 miles an hour in the street right here, well, then the police officer couldn't pull you over for speeding, right? So if he couldn't pull you over for speeding, you couldn't go before the judge and have the judge give you grace and forgive you or release you from it, the penalty of it. So without the law, there is no such thing as grace. You can't have any grace without law. Or what are you being forgiven from? It's like if I say, I forgive you, well, what do you mean you forgive me? I didn't do anything to you. Well, that doesn't exist. You can't have forgiveness without some type of trespass right to be forgiven from. So that's this idea of all of these things go together. They're not separate. They're not one didn't end and one started. God's always been graceful through to Israel throughout from the beginning. Yeah.
So where did the Christian church come up with the idea that on the day of judgment,
mm-hmm.
you go there and Yeshua says, well done, my good and faithful friend, or he stands up for you and that's it, you're done. You don't.
There's a lot of, that's a real big question. A lot of that comes from Revelation where it talks about the throne of judgment and, you know, and this idea of the dead Messiah coming up and then those who people who were there, who remain, we go before Messiah, that day of judgment. But everybody goes, yeah.
But don't we agree yeah. that everything in Revelation doesn't necessarily have to come to pass as stated?
Everything doesn't have to come to pass as far as for judgments. Judgments don't have to come to pass. But as far as for what he was saying about when he saw the throne and what was going on at the throne, that's a little different. But it is the particular part you're talking about, it comes up in Judaism. It's very prevalent, but I don't have time to go into it. But everybody goes through, when you die, everyone goes through a purging, a judgment. A type of, I don't want to get into this a whole lot, but there's some, and maybe we'll talk about it one day in a class, but there's an idea and understanding that there's more to it than what Christianity teaches, you know, so there is an idea of,
I agree with the idea,
yeah.
I'm not so sure about the understanding.
Yeah, I know, it's, yeah, I get it. There's a lot to it, and it's, Christianity, you know, I hate to keep coming back there because I don't want to, but within Christianity, there's no roots of anything that had been given to them to fall back on for thousands of years. So most of what you hear today is, it's something that a pastor said within the last 100 years at best, a little more.
You know, and it
yeah. You want to tell people. Yeah. So they get it right by telling people about Yeshua. You know, and he's Messiah, wonderful. That's how Gentiles come into the house of Israel. I've got a friend of mine from high school I've been going back and forth with for a few days now. And I just felt, I hadn't talked to her in a while. Let me go ahead and reach out to her. Very nice Christian sister down in Southern California. We just get to talk. Hey, how are you doing? How are the kids? Our kids are kind of catching up. And she said, yeah, me and my daughter are going to this. We're going to a new church, and we're taking this class on Hebrew and this and that. And I thought, Lord, see, here you go. So I get to talking to her a little bit. Now she wants me to start sending her things on Hebrew from the beginning. How did you go from being from Christianity to Messianic Judaism? Oh, my gosh. And here she is. She's came out of Catholicism. Not that she was a great practicing Catholic, but that was a family thing, which you know how that is, Therese. It's a family thing. You're Catholic because grandma and that's it. It doesn't matter. You could may have not been in a church for, you know, your whole life, but you're Catholic. So I thought, wow, Lord, this is very interesting. Now I've got a friend of mine who's interested in, and so there's a whole lot to it. And that's part of why I'm bringing this up, because she wants me to get her started at the beginning. What's the first thing? And I thought,
wow,
there is not. You know, when in Christianity, the beginning is what? It's receiving Jesus, right? That's the beginning. That's okay. That's it. That's a very definable space and place, time and space, within time and space, that someone will tell you, I got saved on such and such a day. And that's great. That's a wonderful thing. Judaism is not like that. So I'm trying to get her just to watch what we're doing. And then I'll send her some things too from the beginning. You can't learn it like that. You can't learn it just by, okay, step one. It doesn't quite work like that. it's better to be immersed in the whole thing, because you'll never learn it all that way. You have to learn some things that are deeper. And then why is that the case? And then it kind of branches off and the roots. And then you start seeing, oh, well, that's why this is like this and that is like that. That's why Judaism says this. Well, in Christianity, we think that everyone stands before Jesus and he says, oh, you go to heaven and you go to hell. And there's more to it than that. But there is some understanding. There's just not the basis for what it means. It's like they understand the car. They just don't understand where the car, they don't know who Henry Ford is at all. What's a motor and a transmission? They have no understanding of that, but they understand the car. That part is good. So, yeah. Anybody else have any?
I didn't mean to derail you.
No, that's okay. This is another thing that makes Judaism separate, is that that happens. So wherever the conversation goes, we're going to be reading a portion from the Talmud today. And in this portion, it's from the book of Shabbat, which the book of Shabbat should talk about things pertaining to Shabbat, right? And it largely does, but it's not entirely. Because in the course of the conversations do this. And just like you're saying, that we start talking about this, then Judy could have come in, or Therese, and said something else, or Jewel said something else, and we could have gone like this. So we start off in one spot. But the gold is in the conversation and the back and forth, and then it just leads you, it takes you wherever you go with it. So that's why there's just so much talk about so many things, and it's okay to get off, and yeah. Because that's actually, so what you said basically was as much part of what we're doing as reading this. That makes sense? That's just how Judaism works. It goes that direction. It's so, so anybody thought, yeah.
What changes, and it comes from literally desire that Ruach was in you, to start searching, not
right.
Satisfied with the present status quo of maybe either what you've grown up in, where you're at the time, whatever the case is, but then that drawing begins.
It begins.
Drawing you to
something deeper. And it's interesting because as a general rule, that is absolutely. But when you start looking at individuals and their specific reasons, I think about Teresa's story. I've heard it a bunch of times. You know, here it is. She was just minding her own business, nice Catholic lady, and she's going to see a Holocaust survivor speak. And she gets there, and that lady had canceled, I guess. She wasn't there. Did she cancel? She was there. She broke her hip. So she didn't speak then, right?
No.
She didn't. Doesn't say. So some kind of weight. She watches a video. But nonetheless, she ends up in a Messianic congregation. She starts hearing these words, Adonai and the Ruach. And then she says, hey, that sounds kind of weird. But if I replace Adonai with God and Yeshua with Jesus and the Ruach with the Holy Spirit, oh, it all makes perfect sense. And then she didn't want to stay because she didn't bring anything for Oneg, but she was invited to stay. She stayed, and the rest is history. But all of that being said, how did it start? It started with her going to see this lady. Then it progressed to that lady wasn't even there. Then it progressed to her hearing these things. And then it progressed to her figuring out these names. Then it progressed to her being Onyx. All of this stuff is part of the same exact thing. See how it goes off a little bit? That's Judaism. But that's the journey. The journey always, you take the step and things just continue to progress and change. All right. So let's keep on going here. Did you have some? No? Okay. Comment, did I get that pretty accurate? Story, okay. I've heard, you know how many times I've heard you tell that story?
I'm surprised there's not more to it.
There is, right.
There is.
There is, right. That's nice, nice. I'll let Therese bring her little colors out and color in between the lines for you, the rest of it. All righty, if you want to pick up where we left off, Casey. Oh, and by the way, so Rabbi Bernstein, he's been going through Esther Rabbah, which is a commentary the rabbis talked about just about Esther. And so they start going through it every year around Purim, and they barely got through just, they've been going for weeks on two sentences on a book. How much do they get done? Two sentences. Give or take. Give or take. It's not on Esther, yeah. So I had to teach, matter of fact, I recorded here last week for Rabbi Shapira, Esther chapter 3. He picked a few of us who wanted 10 minutes for Purim, so I taught, and I went to Esther Rabbah. And it's really good, the things that come up. Well, you say, oh, that's what that is. So I want to continue to move us in that direction of seeing what the sages had to say and take time with a whole thing. So today we're going to read some today, which is going to be really good. Okay, go ahead and keep on going if you would.
Moses requested that he be given the kingship. Still, it was not given to him. As it is written, do not draw hither, Exodus 3:5. The word hither refers to nothing other than kingship, as it is stated.
Where are you located?
Top of page 35.
Oh, you know what happened? Okay, thank you. My page got closed. Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Yes. So one more slide, Judy. To nothing other than kingship, as it is stated. Then David the king went in and sat before the Lord, and he said, who am I, O Lord God, and what is my house, that you have brought me hither? 2 Samuel 7:18. The kingdom belongs to the one who is greater than Moses, the one who will wage the ultimate battle for Jacob's inheritance, Moses our righteousness. Messiah righteousness.
We're watching.
A great secret is hidden within God's message to Moses. Do you want to go over that?
Yeah, so look at the words in here. So you see, this happens a lot of times in Hebrew where you have a phrase and they'll take the last letter of each word and put it together. So remove your sandals from your feet. I think it says halom, shel, nalach. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing that a little wrong. But if you look at the last letter of the first word on the right, it's a mem sofit. And below it, it's just a regular mem. You see that? I'll point to. Oh, he's got it right there. You see that there? And so what does that say? Melech. And it's talking about king. Melech is king. It's talking about the stripped king Messiah. Keep on going if you would. Anybody have any thoughts or questions about that? Okay. Go right ahead. Yep.
As we see above, the one who can come closer to remove and burn down the burning bush is Messiah, son of David, who also serves as the purpose of high priest for all Israel. He is both a king and a priest at the same time. How do we attain the strength of the things that are not of him as we prepare for the ultimate coming of Messiah? Blibat ha'esh, or blazing fire, literally means the heart of the fire. We are to focus on the essence of our fire, walk, Messiah, and work, rather than our external religious action.
Let's pause right here. Just a quick little tiny little Hebrew lesson. You see on the bottom of page 35, it's the third row up on the right, it says blibat. Well, how was that heart, or the heart of, or in the heart of the fire? Whenever you have the word be, like be or ba, it has this connotation of in or at, or it's a preposition like we in English, connecting something to something. You know, it, you know, like for instance, give me any help, Casey. Be Yeshua, in Yeshua, Beshem Yeshua, in the name of Yeshua. So that's the context. That's where the B is. Now, Lib, L-I-B, in Hebrew, the heart is Lev. Okay. So this is just, don't get caught up in this, the pronunciation of the vowels. The Hebrew is in the consonants, and the vowels are just sounds. And B and V are the same letter. Okay, that makes sense? So that's why it says lib or lev. And then when you have at at the end of a word, what does at mean? At makes it specific. Like when we say the Torah, Torat emet, the Torah of truth. right? So that's why this means in the heart, in a specific heart, or in the heart of the fire, in the specific heart of the fire. That makes sense. Hebrew is very idea oriented and a picture oriented, not just a. So just want to show that to you, because as you're going through these different words, if you look at them, you'll start picking up. See, this is what I talk about, my friend. Where do we start in Hebrew or in Judaism? I don't know where exactly to start. You have to start where you are and just pick up whatever you can, a little piece. And even says, blibat ha-esh. What is ha? The. What is esh? Fire. What is ish? Man. What is isha? Woman. So we see these different words that you just start picking up a little bit and just keep going with it, because there's a lot in Hebrew that will never, well, the best we can ever hope for is the day we die, we have like about that much. But we're 99 going on 100, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, look, we're 99 and we're still learning like the day we were born. Think about that. We're not old and we can't learn anymore. And I've heard that. No, that's the exact opposite. And that's the exact opposite of Judaism. That is the exact opposite of relationship with God. A relationship with HaSatan is, oh, you know everything. You don't have to ask God for anything. You know everything.
50 years ago.
Well, yeah. Okay, what was? You know everything?
Everything.
Oh, you know everything. Right,
money,
see?
Right?
Exactly. No, you're not so much. Exactly. Yeah, there you go. So keep on going if you would, Case. Okay, here we go. So the top of page 36, Ben David and Ben Yosef. The priest and the king. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it's interesting. They have this on here. You know what? Actually, I think this is a little typo. This should be, and you know, the rabbi does these books, they do them quickly. You see, on the left, see Ben David. What does that say underneath it? The priest, that says Cohen, is what that should say. Because in Hebrew, it says Cohen right there. You see that? Yeah, see right here, it says Cohen. I need a little dealio. See right here? In Hebrew, that says Cohen. You see that right here? Yeah, that's says Cohen, yeah.
So I should change this to Cohen.
Yeah, you should change it to Cohen, yeah. But also on the other side, I believe this is supposed to say they have Halem. That's not right. It should be reversed. It should be Melech. They have the Hebrew letters. So this Mem should be right here, and that Hey should be right here. Melech is what it should be. I'll mention that to him when I.
These pointers don't work on the TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Little...
yeah. Okay, so, but we have the priest and the king. We see the idea within the gematria is 75, the priest and the king. They're interchangeable, Melech and Kohen. That makes sense? Kind of. And it's interesting that these two words they have, there's only, I think, five letters in Hebrew that they don't have the same, if they come at the end of a word, the figure changes some. Yeah, Case? I need to, they do. Yes, not the Hey Lamed Mem. Yeah, exactly. Unless we're missing some, but that's what I believe it should be, it's supposed to be. Well, no, the priest and the king is the same. So the Cohen is the priest, right? But let me see what you did in your, seeing as is your book, you can write in it, which I just did too.
Well, you said that
oh, exactly.
Be
that should be Cohen.
So I was just wondering.
Oh, it's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that's good too, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless there's something different I'm not seeing, it should be melech. It should be a het and not a hey. But for the sake of what we're talking here, I think they just got that part. Yeah. Okay, let me see if he clarifies that in here. Let's keep on going. But the idea of the priest and the king, they're interchangeable. And this brings up a question that comes up in Christianity all the time. Was Yeshua, was Jesus a priest? And if so, what makes a priest a priest? If not, why not? I know you guys know the answer. You talk about this all the time. Yeah, but okay, so let me give you the answer. He wasn't a priest. He wasn't a high priest. He was like a priest and like a high priest. Well, what's the difference? Did he go in the temple? Did he do the sacrifices with? No. No, 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 no. And this is where you get, there's a Hebrew roots thing that says that, oh, he went and his blood went in the mercy seat, because the mercy seat was, it wasn't in the temple. It was under some cave out away from the temple grounds, and it trickled down and all of this unnecessary stuff. That's not what it was, because he wasn't a sacrifice. He was like a sacrifice. Did anybody eat him? Was he burned up? No. He was like, simile, metaphor, not identical. And this is where people within Christianity get into some problems, because that's not Judaism. It's not saying he is, it's that he's like. Now, when he comes back, will he be the king? Yes. Has he ever been the king so far? No. Like a king, he will be the king. And will he be a priest? And actually serving in the temple, we'll see when that comes. But has he been and was he? No. No. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't there have been a process he would have had to gone through to be given the title high priest?
Yeah. Well, right.
So he didn't go through that process?
No, he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. So he was like a priest in that he presented himself before God. Like a lamb. But was he eating on Passover? No. So again, we talked about this idea at the Last Supper, which is like a teaching Passover, which it will be like what Rabbi Shapiro would do when he comes. Was it when he said to the disciples, this is my body and this is my blood, eat and drink of it. What do you think they thought? That's the most unholy, unkosher thing to do. So they recognize he wasn't saying literally, eat my body and drink my blood. He was basically telling them, I am the lamb. I am like the Passover lamb. That makes sense? Yeah, go ahead, Case. You're going to say? You had your hand up? No? Okay. So I just want to get there, because this is important stuff as we go through, that we want to just be reminded of when we talk to people, especially this time of year. We've got Easter coming up. And good, well-meaning Christians are going to send their kids out to reenact something that happened in ancient Babylon when the goddess Ishtar comes out of the river as a rabbit, in the form of a rabbit. And so the people go to worship her. And what do? They take their babies and they sacrifice their babies and take their blood and they dye eggs and they bring them to this big rabbit. Goddess Ishtar, the goddess of fertility. And so that's reenacted unknowingly by Christians with Easter eggs. So all of this stuff, you brought up some earlier, this idea of how come, where do Christians get this or don't get that? That's the whole idea. There's no foundation of it. So if they knew some of the stuff that they were doing, they wouldn't do. Because obviously you don't do that, but they don't know. So when Christianity came about, you had pagans coming in with no oversight from Judaism teaching them Torah, so they would bring in pagan practices. It became part of the church, and it continued. So as we talk about this kind of thing, hopefully you'll have just another little light bulb come on that'll make sense. Oh, and it'll shine light on Ah, so that's why. And it just continues and continues and continues and continues. You guys see any of the Batman movies? The newer ones, the last 10 or 15 years? Well, I just see this picture in my mind. There's a, so Batman, he, you know, he's about to go out to fight the evil villains. He's got this big, it's like a warehouse of a room that has cars and has all his little gadgets and all this kind of stuff. And there's a scene multiple times where he walks into this room and he flicks on a switch and a light comes on. Then the next light comes on. Then the next light, and they keep going until the whole room is lit. That's how Judaism is. You keep me a little light and it all starts making sense again. And you can connect things back to you learn 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Now, oh, that makes more sense. I'm seeing some from a different perspective now. So that's the importance of studying together and continuing. And when we take our last breath, having the idea that we didn't know everything, we don't have to know everything, we just continue. And it gives a whole new idea, this understanding of God accepts us just how we are, right? Thinking we know it all or thinking we know nothing. Or wherever, or anywhere in between, yeah. And you can see, right, so the real Torah, the full Torah is given in heaven, which we've talked about that idea before, that the Torah that we see here, that's given here, it's a watered-down version. It was what was his people would actually take, that they could actually deal with. It's kind of like the milk given to a baby, not a steak. You know, you can give a baby a steak where you have a problem. You know, you have to know where people are in order to accommodate their nourishment, their spiritual nourishment, where they are as they continue to grow. All right, let's go ahead and keep on going, if you would.
Gur Aryaya provides stunning commentary for the reason for the burning bush, especially considering the current events taking place in Israel. He appeared in the burning bush as a sign for the future to explain to us that when Israel is in trouble or distress, so is he, as stated in Psalm 91:15. When he calls on me, I will answer him. I will be with him in distress. When Israel is in distress, his kingdom is not complete, which is why he appeared from the burning bush. Of course, his distress is the distress that is dressed only in our world, not in the heavenly realms. The distress of Jacob and his stepping on the thorns and snares of the enemy awaken the mercy from above. How does God respond to Israel's distress? Haggai 15b declares, when a person suffers, how does the Shekinah express itself? Woe is me from my head, woe is me from my arm, as God emphasizes with the sufferer, or empathizes. If the Holy One, blessed be He, suffers to such an extent over the blood of the wicked, how much more so does He suffer over the blood of the righteous that is spilled? Let us dive further into the secret of the burning thorns that speak of our days today.
Before we keep going on, I want to show you guys something. Can you scroll back up just a touch, Judy? Oh, no, not that far, not that far. That's okay. If you guys look in your book, it says, towards the end, it says, Haggai 15b declares. Now, what is Haggai 15b? So whenever you see these writings that come up and will have a number with an A or a B, that is code for you that's from Talmud. And there's some others that have A and B, but Talmud has a page. It has an A side. And it has a B side. So this is in Tractate Haggai, page 15, on the B side of the page. Yeah. So Haggai, that's the next question I'm going to bring. I just brought up to you guys the names of the tractates. Largely tell what the tractate is about, but it's not limited to that. So we brought up Shabbat. We're going to bring up today the Tractate Shabbat. What is that largely about? Shabbat, but not entirely about Shabbat, because the messages can kind of... So what is a hag? A holiday. And what is the offering on the holiday? The special offering? the Haggigah. So in this particular tractate, it centers around the holiday offerings given to, so there you go, another little piece of what things are. And then also, if you look, it's, you know, on the, what do you call this? The Kindle edition, there's more references on the bottom, perhaps, because I saw he had some references in there. Yeah, Perkei de Rabbi Elazar. So he doesn't have that in here. Oh, you know what? Okay, hang on. 37:38. It's not lined up. Yeah, okay, I see it in here. It's set up different on there. Gotcha. Okay, yeah, so all of these are books. Perkei de Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar was he did a lot of work in studying particular things, and he has his own book. Perkei means like a chapter or a writing of Rabbi Elazar. And Yalkut Mashiach Vegeola al HaTorah Shemot. Well, I can't right now. I'm not remembering Yalkut. Yalkut is, in case you remember, but it's of Messiah and the Geulah, the redemption, and the Torah of Exodus, page 249. So you can see what he's writing about. He's writing about Mashiach. The idea of the Geulah, the redemption in the Torah in the book of Shemot, page 249, because the first Geulah, the first redemption was what? When Israel was left Egypt. And then there's the HaGeulah, the final redemption, is when Messiah comes back. So when you see these little things, they mean something. So trying to figure out what the basis of what they are talking about, just got to look in the thing. So, yeah.
37.
Uh-huh.
On my page 30.
Yes.
38 is on my page 32.
Exactly.
But they're both on the same page there.
In the Kindle. That's the Kindle edition, so it's not it's the format's a little different.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at. The format on the Kindle is a little different. Yeah. Yeah, give me one quick sec in case I want to look something up here. See, and it's, yeah, I'm listening to you, Judy. Yeah, I see that. Yeah, I'll be done here in one sec. So the idea of Yalkut is like a writing. It's of stories to talk about the Messiah and the final redemption in the Torah. In tractate Shemot. So does that make sense? Okay, so where are we at, Casey? We're in the last. Did we finish that? Okay, good. So we're going to go ahead and stop there. Abba, we thank you and praise you for this time we've had together, and we ask you to help us to continue to chew on these things and to just continue to move forward in you, learning, studying together. In Messiah's name, Lord, amen.